that was a scene that I had written and rewritten and written and rewritten and written and rewritten right up until when we shot it. And Noah was in the car riding to set to shoot the scene, and I was having a panic attack, like, rewriting the scene. Those are the moments for me where I feel like this is an opportunity that I have that a lot of people do not have, to tell the fragility, to depict the fragility of those sort of early days of realizing your sexuality. And I didn't want to do it a disservice, and I wanted it to feel authentic, and I wanted people who had gone through a similar process to see something in it that connected to them in a real way.
Welcome to EW's Binge. I'm Shana Naomi Crockmall.
And I'm Patrick Gomez.
We are binging our way through an entire show we love with one podcast episode focused on each season.
And today we are talking about season 3 of Schitt's Creek, which originally aired on the CBC and Pop TV, and now can be streamed on Netflix.
And joining us to answer all of our burning questions and freakouts is co-creator and star Dan Levy.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dan.
I've just gone 3 seasons without acknowledging your beautiful sweatshirt.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh, well,
I love a good
now we can
situation.
Talk about it, because it's not really going to be a spoiler if you've watched season 3.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
now
this is the time.
Perfect.
Exactly.
It was.
I knew instinctively that I,
I love it. It did come actually full, like, David size. Like, if I stand up and, like, let it go, it will come down to, like, my knees.
Is this so official or unofficial?
It's official. It's got the tag from,
if
like,
you're
Pop
listening and not watching, Patrick's wearing
an extra large?
A Rose Apothecary sweatshirt.
Yes, I have a Rose Apothecary sweatshirt on that I've been waiting to wear. I was, like, almost going to do it for Halloween last year.
I see.
And then I ended up not, and so I figured this
we
was
we share
the...
a similar brow.
No, yes. Yeah. No, totally. I had it all planned, so maybe next year.
And that's not really a spoiler, since we're trying to keep our spoilers to season three or before. Yeah. We'll see how well that works.
Yes.
I feel like we're going to get all mixed up with various relationships as we go from here. All right, so... Season 3, I feel like, becomes a little bit of a turning point for a lot of people come into the start watching the season in season 3.
Yeah.
But before we get into all the details of it, can you recap season 3 for us in 30 seconds? You've been doing a really good job. I think you can do it.
Okay. I'm trying to think of what, I know what happens to me.
Are you ready? Set.
I'm ready.
Go.
Season 2 ended with the family realizing that they actually loved each other for the first vocalizing it for the first time. So there is an undercurrent now of a tenderness with this family, and season 3 really builds on that, extracting the love and the joy out of this family. I think we've been in this town now for quite some time, so season 3 is really a celebration and an exploration of what it means to accept your surroundings and open yourself up.
There you go. Look at you. If you are not watching this on video, you should, because his face is when he successfully does this is fantastic.
I'm such a competitive person that the countdown clock, I'm like, oh,
like,
gotta get it done.
You did it.
No, you did great.
That's the vaguest description of our season I've done yet.
But now we're going to deep dive.
We'll
so
do
it's
a
fine.
Few specifics.
Great.
All right, so jumping right in, we start with a bang. I'm so sorry I said that. That's not where I meant to go, but we start with Jake basically coming out of the...
Oh, yeah, we do start with a bang.
Yeah, we go right into, here is this half-naked guy who is hanging out for some afternoon delight, and despite your entire family coming in to interrupt / witness this, he doesn't ever excuse himself to go to the bathroom to put his clothes back on. He's just happy
the
to meet everyone.
Character of Jake, who...
played by Steve Lund.
Played by Steve Lund.
Oh my God.
Alexis, this is Jake. We seem to have caught the boys in
an afternoon delight. Is that term still a going thing?
No. Never say that again.
Don't do that.
David, I thought we agreed only when nobody was home.
Nobody was home. Oh, nobody was home.
Here it is. Nice to meet you, Jacob. If you take half as much care of our son as you do your physique, David should be in very good hands.
Yes, well, not your hands, but generally speaking.
Well, I hope it was worth it.
Very funny character who seemingly has no shame at all about who he is, what he wants. He is an incredibly sort of sexually fluid character that has now been with Stevie and myself and has proposed that we all be together, which I think for Stevie and I in our history was just not the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
Exploring a throuple with your best friend I don't think is the healthiest way to go, but for those of you that have, congratulations.
To be clear,
You were going to go on a date with him knowing that he had just broken up with me?
No, I wasn't.
You showed up for the date.
No, I didn't.
You're literally here in the restaurant.
Because I was gonna tell him that I was breaking up with him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, fine. But if it makes you feel any better, nobody hates me more than me, generally speaking.
Fair enough. I would have done the same thing.
How many people did you have to define Thrupple for during like the process?
A lot of people, including my dad. And it was like...
Oh, how did you explain it to your dad?
Well, it was like three people coexisting together in a relationship, which is great if you can make it work. I think for these best friends, this was not the right equation. This would not help serve them in a positive way.
I know one person that's in one that's completely happy.
I know a couple people. Sure. And, you know, I also know a couple people that have gotten out of them and it's crashed and burned, but to each their own. So for this character to come along and, you know, David's still seeing this person after, I think season two we had...
Yeah, you plant the seed knowing that if you came back, or did you already know? I guess that's another question. Did you know you were coming back for season three by the end of season two?
I think we had a good indication, and...
So the seed was planted intentionally.
Seed was planted intentionally. So season three, I think, is David and Stevie with Jake and what that means. So they have to negotiate this thruple potential and realize that they are going to put their friendship first. But yeah, it's a very sexy way to open the show. Fortunately, Steve, I guess, goes to the gym. I don't know. It looked great. And it was very funny. And yeah.
I feel like this is also, you get into that sort of small town dilemma where it's just like, how many people can you date?
There's real fast.
All at the same time, separately, like everyone's ex has slept with someone else. Mm-hmm. Like David's barely even been in this town that long and you're kind of already run out of options.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Alexis has also dated her way through like the other half of the
Well, I think when you're in panic mode, when you're in panic mode, you just do whatever you can to not be lonely. And it's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like also, I feel like this show has a lot of very traditional relationships and the sort of like Johnny and Moira's love story is like really deep and really sincere and they know each other so well. And but then you also have these moments between like Roland and Jocelyn where there's something unexpected and weird and kinky like in what they're into. And
I think that was Blouse Barn where we discussed the role playing of Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
And then their massage situation later.
Yeah.
The show holds like a lot of these like very like traditional relationships and untraditional relationships at the same time.
Which is very calm about all of it. To show everything. And to not have any sort of judgment about it.
Yeah. I also feel like it helps you not fall into that sitcom-y trap of like everyone has to just get upset about things all the time for the sake of being upset.
Yeah.
And I think relationship stuff is often used as that sort of crutch where it's like, oh, well, I'd have to be jealous.
I find people's excitability to be very funny. How people get excited about things and what that means to them is very funny. And our family is very excitable. They get excited about a lot of things.
That is very true.
Dad, what did you do to my paper?
I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything with your paper. Your laptop was open. I did a little editing, nothing major.
I have been accused of plagiarism.
What?
Yeah, Jocelyn thought I cheated because someone used words like duplexity and back towards.
Untoward.
Whatever. And now I have to do the whole thing again when my original paper was totally fine.
Well, it wasn't totally fine, honey. There was questionable grammar and a few spelling mistakes, and I mean...
Dad!
All right, I'll back off.
Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, did she happen to say anything about that quote from Lee Iacocca?
And we get some parental sabotage in that ongoing growth, right? So we have Johnny who insists on rewriting Alexis's paper when she goes back to high school, whether she really wants him to or
this season was what we were building with. I mean, the intention of the show from the very beginning would be that if we got the opportunity, season after season would peel back the layers on these characters and open them up to what they really want and what means something to them outside of what they've become accustomed to. So season three, we finally have gotten to a point where Alexis she's defaulted to all of these different things and they haven't really worked out and she now goes back to school. And we realized that she had never technically graduated high school, and she now has to go and get her degree in high school. And Annie played those scenes so beautifully because, again, it was never really... We didn't want to make fun of that because that's not something to make fun of. That is just a reality. People do. Mm-hmm. People have gone through that every day. But the vulnerability she showed in the process and how she went in there thinking that she was going to be the cool girl in school, which is what she's always been, and then for a moment being made to feel like maybe I'm not, and then in the end she was.
So here's the thing about Marie Antoinette. Even though I love to eat cake, I think I'd be pretty annoyed with her myself. I do see your hand up, Alexis. It's just that you probably haven't had a chance to catch up.
Okay, it's just that she never actually said, let them eat cake.
Well, that depends on who you ask.
Well, I asked Kirsten Dunst, who played her in the movie. That line was actually written years before Marie Antoinette allegedly said it. And Kirsten also told me at the premiere that she was jealous of my bangs.
Thank you for that contribution to the discussion.
Yeah, she still has that confidence. That
but it like also showed someone
there.
Who realized, yeah. like, I have to do the building blocks now. Mm-hmm. I have to, like, start work from the beginning to get to where I want to be, mm-hmm. which is such a lovely, I think Alexis has been so well-intentioned, and she really is a joyful person who just wants the best for herself and everyone around her. I mean, she's disturbingly self-involved. But there's a charm to it because she really, she really cares, mainly about herself, but also sometimes about the people around her. Mm-hmm. So the high school storylines were really funny to play, her going back and getting this degree and what it means. And I think the little wins, again, going back to sort of selectively choosing when to get a win for each of our characters. I mean, the fact that she gets her diploma, that she graduates, which is what the season builds towards, is a genuine thing. Mm-hmm. This is a family that was not around for their kids' high school graduations, or in their case, they thought they were, but she wasn't there. So they had flown to Europe where they had put her up in a boarding school, gone to the graduation, and not noticed their daughter was not part of the ceremony.
It was very long.
Johnny even has a photo that's not her.
Not her.
Not her. But my favorite lines from that are you went to Switzerland, you didn't graduate in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. That's not my fault, from your character. And then when you tell Alexis, I already went to your other graduation. It's not my fault you weren't there.
Yeah, that's how they operate.
Yeah.
And so it was great to start exploring that path for Alexis, because that is really the trajectory that she will stay on for the rest mm-hmm. of the show. Self-exploration and putting herself first and realizing that she has to work for what she wants, and the validation that comes with that, the validation that comes with not having things handed to you on a silver platter. That was really sweet. And then halfway through the season, we introduce the character of Patrick, played by the great Noah Reed.
You should see my notes when we got here, literally just devolve into me writing Patrick's name over and over again.
Which, when we were looking at the notes together, was very confusing for me as a Patrick.
Yeah.
Right.
Very confusing. Like, so we're just,
yeah.
Before we get to Patrick, though, I do have to ask about Alexis.
Sure.
Her backstories.
My turn. Okay. My eyes are brown. I am basically sample size. And one time I escaped from a Thai drug lord's car trunk by bribing him with sex.
Right idea, honey, but you know what? It's gotta be more challenging for everybody in the room.
Eyes are aqua.
You did what?
Where did Alexis come from? She's always been involved in the darkest sort of like high intrigue political crises. She's just been an international, and I think part of it came from like the socialite world, where you're like, she's dating who now? He's mm-hmm. like the czar's son from some sort of like Russian oligarch thing, and suddenly they're trapped in a... The fact that Alexis has been like trapped in palaces, places, and like somehow, man, oh, David's sending her passports and fake IDs and colored contact lenses. Mm-hmm. She's had a colorful past, and I think it's, in a way, it's such a lovely part of her character because she's endured so much, and it's unfazed her.
Oh my God. Ever since David left, you two have been so dramatic. Do I have to remind you of the time that I was taken hostage on David Geffen's yacht by Somali pirates for a week and nobody answered my texts?
I had just had my eyelashes dyed. Everything was cloudy.
I mean, I mean, ultimately, we realize David almost is more scarred by all of those experiences than she is.
Well, that, I think...
He, like, still has this kind of concern for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she doesn't quite understand it. I think that was season three, I guess, when he said, I care.
Yeah.
When she's talking about, like, why do you care so much? Or why does it matter? And he was like, because I was the person that always had to, like, worry about you.
Yeah.
Which, again, those rare moments of sort of intimacy and sentimentality are really lovely to play and to write. Yeah. So...
But now Patrick.
Okay.
But now Patrick.
Let's talk about Patrick's.
It's a good idea. Your business. Rebranding local products and crafts. It's very inventive.
Thanks.
And I like the name. Rose Apothecary. You know, it's just pretentious enough.
Would we call that pretentious or timeless?
How did you find Noah Reed?
I knew Noah before. I knew him socially. A friend of mine in the process was like, I think Noah would be a good person to see for this. And I had known that he was a musician as well and a really solid actor, and he came in and auditioned, and it was just no questions asked. Like, this is it.
Do you do like a chemistry test when you're casting for a love interest against yourself? It was just like,
we didn't have time. Because I was so deep in the writing process and acting, and you know, we cast him halfway through the season, so we were shooting the show while we were hiring this character.
Do you write everything before you guys start?
We try to, yeah. For the most part, we know what our season's gonna look like. And then he came in, and he didn't really have any idea what the character was going to be or the extent with which he would be used. And we didn't either. We sort of thought, if it works, great. I know the stories that I want to tell. And the intention...
Like, if it works, great, like, this is it for seasons in a row? Or did you even, like, how far out did you sort of envision that this character would be important?
I thought that David needed a relationship because he had been so scarred and so, he's so sort of fragile when it comes to love. And his backstory, too, of, like, the constant... misfortune of his dating life and how he just anybody and everybody that he brought home eventually sort of like used and abused him. So for me, it was really important to start revealing a side of the character of David that trusted, or at least began to trust, and that meant someone who really liked him for who he was, as shocking as that was for him at first. And Noah, what he brings to that character is such a stability and a sense of calm. And there's such polar opposites. And yet, I think what originally attracted Patrick to David in a social capacity was the intrigue of like, who is this strange unicorn person that I've never seen? Because he's come from not a huge city, and the kinds of people that he's explored in his day-to-day life were never this, wasn't this train wreck. And I think, so we wrote him in, and they were going to be business partners, and that slowly developed into something. And I had always intended for the character to not know, really have a firm grasp on his sexual orientation, but knew there was a curiosity, and slowly sort of reveal that side to himself, or at least have him be put in touch with those sort of impulses. And slowly but surely we built this relationship up as the store was being built. So not only are they forced to sort of work together after Patrick elects to help David in his journey because he clearly has no idea what he's doing, but there's something more to it that I think made Patrick want to be around David. And getting to write that slow burn was so fun and so rewarding. And it led to the intimacy of their relationship and sort of the confusion, which I think sort of tees up our final episode of season three, which is the revelation that there's more to this than David had assumed.
I was just calling to run my business plan by you in a little more detail. So feel free to give me a call back, and I will be happy to walk you through it.
Okay, ciao.
Ciao. I said ciao to that person.
Hi, Patrick.
Yeah, I think I called you David. Which, that's not your name. You can just delete that text, the voicemail that I left you.
How was it filming that voicemail scene?
It was fun. It was challenging. And I think for me, it's like I'll always write things and be like, oh, I think this is a funny scene, and then forget that I have to play it. And to do a huge sort of monologue on a voicemail, trying to, like, stoned, I got there and was like, oh, shit. Okay, well, we'll try and get through this. And it was okay. I mean, the beauty of editing, and I stumbled through it.
I would say your stoned look is up there with Catherine's drunk.
Thank you so much. Really, that's a lot of like powder in my eyes that like made them really glassy. Amazing. I wish that I could say it was wholly my acting chops, but there was a lot that went into it.
We were debating. We were like, do you think he got high?
It was just like, it was a very perfect
season
like,
one when we went mess. To the I shouldn't be saying
oh yes you
but
should.
When we went to the tailgate party, the last take, I'm doing these keg stands, and the last take I was like, just put the beer in, and I did a full keg stand with real beer,
and kept going.
It was a very cold night and it kept me warm
there you
the
go
car right home.
Booze blanket.
So we built up to this scene at the end of our season where Patrick and David kiss, and it's a rare moment in our show because I think it played quite. It was without humor, and yet the humor was sort of there in the background, sort of watching with a smile, and the understanding I think from David that his impulses were to always think this person is not interested, and it took Stevie saying,
"I think I'm crashing a date."
Oh no. No, no.
He thinks you guys were here one-on-one. He bought you a present. I didn't even get you a present.
No, I noticed that.
Do you want me to look?
No, I don't want you to look.
Okay, I'll just say this. If there is anything remotely sentimental in here, he is on a date with you right now.
But he's not even sure it's a date. Like, he has no...
He doesn't know it's a date. It's his birthday, and the guy... He thought the guy was sort of like... charity offering to have some dinner, and it wasn't until Stevie
his family forgot
who Stevie says, you know, if he gets you a gift that means something, it's like he's into you, and obviously David sort of opens the gift, and it was a framed receipt from the first sale at their store together, and David sort of knows in that moment that there's something going on, and Stevie sort of gives him the thumbs up, which I thought was a really fun and lovely choice. I mean, I never wanted conflict between those friends in terms of like jealousy. I find jealousy to be such a sort of off-putting character trait. The fact that Stevie, knowing what they had gone through, sort of the complications of their relationships as friends and lovers, that she could put that aside and sort of put him first was really nice and important for me in terms of revealing that side of the character, because she is so hard. And then that sort of led to the scene in the car where Patrick tells David that he is glad that they ended up connecting. And that was a scene that I had written and rewritten and written and rewritten and written and rewritten right up until when we shot it. And Noah was in the car riding to set to shoot the scene, and I was having a panic attack, like, rewriting the scene. Something about it never worked.
Thank you.
For what?
I've never done that before with a guy.
Okay.
Yeah, and, getting a little scared that I was going to let you leave here without us having done that. So, thank you for making that happen for us.
Well, fortunately, I am a very generous person.
I called a friend of mine and we started commiserating over like the coming out experience, because that was really, those are the moments for me where I feel like this is an opportunity that I have that a lot of people do not have, to tell the fragility, to depict the fragility of those sort of early days of realizing your sexuality, and I didn't want to do it a disservice, and I wanted it to feel authentic, and I wanted people who had gone through a similar process to see something in it that connected to them in a real way. And originally, we had scripted it that Patrick kissed David. And part of the struggle for me was it didn't feel real, and I had to stop and think about my own first experiences when I was interested in guys and what that meant. And it sort of dawned on me that he shouldn't be the one that kisses David, that David is the one with the experience. And Patrick is a character that has been incredibly confident this whole time, but wouldn't it be amazing and service the character and the experience if he sort of, everything he was doing was to try and get this guy's attention. And when it came down to that moment where it mattered, he just couldn't do it because he was scared. And David had to be the one that helped him through it. And then as soon as I reshifted that scene, everything fell into place. Patrick's conversation about thank you for doing that for us, because I didn't want to let you leave without that happening. And it worked. And Noah played it so beautifully, and it has become one of those sort of like touchstone moments in our show where I feel like people who had come to the show as a comedy were starting to realize like there's more stories to be told, which was always the case. You just have to earn those stories season after season. So,
did you try shooting it any of the different ways?
No.
Just that once you landed on that, you were like,
I dictated the dialogue to him while he was in the car, and he started writing it down. So that by the time we got to set, we started to rehearse the new version of the scene, and I knew once we started rehearsing it that it felt right.
Well, it was a beautiful way to end that season.
Thanks.
Oh, I was going to go watch it right now.
I know. It was a lot. All right. That's season 3 of Schitt's Creek.
That's season 3 of Schitt's Creek.
Old notes.
Thanks so much for listening to EW's Binge. Thank you, Dan,
for joining us,
spilling all of the secrets.
Yeah, and you can check out actual video of these discussions on EW.com. See Dan's fantastic faces and my sweater. Exactly. Make sure to subscribe and rate our podcast. Comment there. Let us know your favorite moments from the season. If we didn't get to talk about them, we can keep that conversation going. You can find me at Patrick Gomez LA.
I'm at Shayna Naomi. You should find Dan on Instagram.
Yes.
Instead.
At InstaDanJLevy.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. And catch up. If you haven't, you can come back and hear what we have to say, what Dan has to say about season 4 of Schitt's Creek.
Absolutely.
When we come back. Ooh. Thank you.